Hello, this is Robert Rickover. I'm an Alexander Technique teacher in Lincoln, Nebraska. I also teach in Toronto, Canada. And my guest today is Bob Leda, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in the Boston area. And we're going to talk today, hi to you, we're going to talk today about working with musicians, both from the point of view of someone who is a musician, who is considering taking Alexander lessons, and maybe a little bit for teachers, maybe some ideas we have that might help teachers who are teaching musicians. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's always fun talking to you. I'll tell
yes,
you that. Could you give our listeners just a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Sure. For me, where we work, the Alexander Technique is how you do what you do, and who you are when you do it, and how can you as a student explore all of this and grow into your potential.
Right. And certainly playing a musical instrument or singing is something that musicians do.
They do.
And they often do a lot of it during the course of a day. And they often do it under some pretty dramatic pressures, like certainly professional musicians are held to a very high standard, and if you screw up in an orchestra, that's not good, right? Stuff
right.
like that. And also just the time demands of it, the practice hours, the teaching hours, the performance hours.
And so, the practice and teaching and playing environments. You know, you
have
rooms that are this
not
big,
good always.
Sounds filtering in from all the place, all over
working
the
place. Working in an orchestra pit, crowded, or often having to share music stands, not having comfortable chairs. I mean, it's a tough profession.
Yes.
And it's not surprising that a very high percentage of professional musicians end up playing in pain. There have been studies to that effect.
Well, at where I work at Berklee College of Music in Boston, we did a survey about 10 years ago, and a survey around pain. And one of the questions was, have you ever been unable to practice or unable to perform because of pain? And almost 80% of the students and faculty said yes. You know, so Berklee put together some initiatives to try to address that beforehand rather than reacting afterwards.
That's very consistent with a big study that was done maybe 10 years ago by some professional organization of musicians. I think their number was like 84%.
Yeah, so
it's a very high number. And it's not something that I've noticed that it's not something that musicians like to talk about. And when I've taught in academic environments, teaching music students, and there would be professors there, they don't really want to hear this, or they certainly don't want to talk about it. It's a kind of a dirty little secret almost.
Well, it's tough because if you can't play, there's 10 people in line behind you, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a choice of either playing through pain and trying to accommodate it, or you may not get that next job. Because it's a very competitive environment where the supply really outstrips the demand.
Very much so, yeah. So for a musician who may be experiencing some of that or isn't now, but knows people who have and don't want to be in that situation, what does the Alexander Technique offer them?
Fortunately, that's in the how you do what you do.
Yeah.
And who you are when you do it.
Yeah.
I think what Alexander work really offers is that, yes, there's a technique to it, but it's not the technique they're using to learn to play their instrument. So they can improve improve without being threatened so much. One of the things I do at the beginning of my group classes that I teach is show a film of a variety of musicians playing. They all look different in the way they play. They all move differently, and they're all, with one exception, because I had to throw one in there, they're all well-known and excellent musicians. So it's not one size fits all. You can build on what you've already got rather than trying to throw it away and learn something else. You know, we're trying to just get out of the way, get out of the way, get out of the way, and let our innate skills come through.
Yeah, I do think that some musicians are hesitant because they, as in a sense, have a technique that they've learned. And here someone comes along who may not even be a musician. In my case, right. I don't know about you. I'm not.
Pianos run away from me. So
yeah, I mean, I am as far from being a musician as it's possible to be. So why should I learn a technique from someone that's not even a musician if I've already got this technique for playing the violin or whatever I do?
Yeah. Well, here's what I say to, like, I have college students, right?
Yeah.
And the way I answer that kind of question is, do you play the same way you did when you were 12 years old? Mm-hmm. And they say, of course not, right? Because you grew up, right. You did something then, now you do something different now, and I guarantee you 5 years from now, you're going to do something different again as you grow and evolve. And Alexander work can really help you in that evolution. You know, and they seem to be comfortable with that.
And it's not that the Alexander technique negates their techniques for playing. It's a kind of, it addresses more how they apply those techniques they've learned, how they do it. And you know, and the other thing that I think is helpful to explain to musicians that, and I'm thinking here instrumentalists in particular, that there are really two instruments in the room. There's the violin or the cello or the flute or whatever, but then there's you. You're an instrument. And of those two instruments, the one that's not going to change is the instrument. It's just there. It doesn't have the ability to change itself. But you have quite a bit of ability to change how you function.
Yeah, the phrase I used like to use of that on that, I'm glad you reminded me, is how you use yourself as an instrument to play your instrument.
Yeah.
You know, that really rings home to them.
Right, because you are the instrument that's playing the instrument. And, of course, we're more than just an instrument. We're all sorts of other things. But, you know, a musician uses their arms and their breathing and so on to play, their breath to play, and that's a kind of an instrumental activity, you might say.
Yeah, and if you abstract it back, they're moving in space at particular times. You know, that's really what the production of music is all about. And we can work with movement. We can work with their sense of space. We can work with their sense of time, and we can work with how that gets put together so that their musicality can come out. On a very mundane level, it's to take the extra energy they use to keep themselves upright, liberate that, and let it go rather than into staying upright, into their artistic expression. And the changes happen very quickly, you know, and what's great about teaching this in group classes, they're so sensitive to sound, they can hear it, you know, and it may not believe that it happened, but they can hear it. And so that usually brings them in for further things.
Right. Now, maybe we should talk a little bit about singers as a group. That I did an interview years ago with someone, I'm sure you know, Ariel Weiss,
Oh, yeah,
teacher
sure.
in
Well, yeah, we're pals.
Philadelphia, and she made a comment that I've never forgotten because she works with singers a lot, I think at the Curtis Institute
In
down there.
Philadelphia,
And she said, we were talking about people in general and musicians among them not having a really good idea of how their body functioned just on a mechanical level and structural level. And she said, and I said, well, I thought working with instrumentalists was in some ways a little easier because they don't necessarily have a lot of preconceived ideas, and they're more willing to change internally, to experiment with different ways of using themselves. And she said, yeah, they tend not to have as many preconceived ideas about what they have to do to play, or they're willing to change. She said musicians in general have that, except she said for singers who have all kinds of interesting ideas about what they have to do. And then she said, and mostly incorrect.
Yeah, that's a real chicken and egg thing, you know? It's do the ideas come from the interpretation of their experience? You know, which came first, all of that. One of the really practical demonstrations I use for singers for breathing is I'm going to step back a little bit. So they'll never get what the diaphragm does, but the diaphragm, when you inhale,
Drops down.
so you have that down, that motion, but your ribs complement that by doing the opposite. So I have people pair off doing this and that, so they just see the expansion, contraction, expansion, contraction that happens when one sings or when one speaks or anything else. And that one's usually a real eye opener. You know, they have there's a lot of strange ideas about exactly what's happening in their torso. So yeah,
Exactly.
go ahead.
Well, and various ideas about breathing that abdominal breathing and this and that, and a lot of it is really not based on the reality of what's actually going on. And so, as Ariel pointed out, that's a little obstacle to overcome. One of the things I've noticed, perhaps more with singers than instrumentalists, is that when you do help them in their singing and out comes a often a more resonant, stronger, better sound that anyone in the room, except me maybe because I'm not that musical, but in a group will say, wow, that's really wonderful. It's not uncommon for the person who actually did that to think, that's not legitimate singing. I'm not doing the effort. I mean, what's going on, I think, is they're not creating the little effort pattern that they think they need in order to produce sound. And
Yeah, that's
when
really
that, when,
one of Alexander's insights that that he used, where you're sort of anticipating the effort necessary to perform an action. You know, you can imagine picking up a suitcase you think is really heavy, and so you know, brace yourself for it, and all of a sudden there's nothing in there. It's like, what did I do? Right? You know, so but there's I think this is a really deep one, Robert, that you're talking about here. There's something very comforting about feeling that effort. Ah, I'm working hard. This is good. Ah, I can feel this. This is good. I know where I am. And so when that drops away, it can be very scary. It can be very disorienting.
It definitely, and of course, that's true for all Alexander students to some extent. But when someone has so much invested in that activity, then it's even a bigger.
Yes, no, it's a bigger.
And you you have to address it, and you know they have to go at their own pace. They have to. They can't. You can't really ask them to shed everything in one lesson or two. I mean, it's
It's unwise.
It would not be a good idea.
Yeah, no, you need, everybody needs time to adapt to their newer circumstances. And singing particularly is, I think, a really exposed profession. And you really have to face yourself in order to find that a pure and complete sound. And so we have to be, I believe, tremendously supportive and willing to let them go back and protect and do all the things that they have to do, you know, and then just try again, try again, try again.
Yeah. You know, one more thing that maybe be worth talking about, many musicians or music students spend huge amounts of time practicing the same piece over and over again.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of that is necessary to learn the basic stuff, but a lot of times what the practice seems to do is just dig in or reinforce whatever harmful habits they're doing. And I've noticed that when students start to learn how to take charge of themselves with Alexander ideas, using Alexander directions, for example, as they're playing, that they can get to the same level or even a better level with fewer hours of practice. I've had some older students who had families who were taking, you know, getting a bachelor's or master's in music, and who did not have the time. There was no way they could put in the amount of hours that their colleagues were. It was impossible.
Yeah.
But because of their Alexander training, they ended up doing, in many cases, better. So there is that practice time, and I think what the Alexander technique can help is introduce a quality aspect to that. So it's not just quantity of repetition of playing a song, but how do you actually change your thinking to improve the quality of what you're doing? Because ultimately, that's the purpose of the practice.
Yeah, I think also Alexander work is tremendously beneficial if you're using visualization, you know, rather than physical practice, which people who are squeezed for time can use a lot. And you can visualize yourself playing whatever the piece is, and at the same time sense all that might be happening, and then apply whatever technique works for you. You know, directions can be one of those while you're doing the visualization. Then when it comes the time you actually come to the instrument or come to actually singing, there'll be a change. There'll be a change you can embrace. You know, so I agree.
Anything else you want to add for
the
teachers or musicians?
Yeah, there's one thing I run into a lot, and I think you have to be comfortable with, is many musicians identify themselves with how they're playing. So if I play badly, I'm a bad person. If I play well, I'm a good person. If that person over there plays really well, they're better than me, you know. And so to make that not quite so tightly coupled, you know, I think there's a direct correlation between how easy you are with your head and your spine, and how willing you are to be not quite so, you know, bound up by all of that. So it's a serious thing, and musicians, especially the ones in school, because I'm in a music school, can lose track of why they're playing. You know, they forget the joy they got from it in the first place. You know, they're so wrapped up in all the details. And so anything we can do to have them be more in touch with that joy, I think is a great thing.
Yeah. Well, this would be a good place to end our conversation.
Okay.
So,
Robert, thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. My guest today has been Bob Leda, an Alexander Technique teacher in the Boston area. And it's been great talking to you.
It's been fun. Hello, everybody. Goodbye, everybody. You can always get a hold of me. Robert will tell you the way.
Yep, I will.